Chapter 22.
Switch me to another duty, begged Kelsey. After yesterday's little outburst, you're in no position to be making demands. Do your job or find a new one, snapped her boss.
Hesley slammed the door in her face. Kelsey slumped against the wall, clutching the day's list of inbound parents. There was nowhere to hide. She straightened her shirt, then approached the lobby, agonizing over how professional to act.
Mr. Hadley, she called.
Michael gave her a filthy look.
So, it's like that, huh? I'm sorry, I didn't know how to... Where's your mom? I thought she'd be with you.
Mom's got work.
So it's just you?
I don't know, Kelsey. Is it just me? Blushing, she pretended to consult her checklist.
This way. You're Ward 3.
She led him through the labyrinth of corridors to the antenatal unit, parking him in the seats outside.
If you wait here for a second, I'll be back with your child.
Hurrying into the ward, she navigated her way to the designated child in bed F11. As she reached the infant, her heart skipped a beat. The child was rasping, its bedsheet splattered in red. A metallic band clung to the poor child's midriff, dovetailing with stitches and bloodied gauze. Kelsey glanced at the neighboring crib, where a baby slept without complaint. Her heart pounded. The unit was deserted, save for automatons administering milk in the adjacent wards. Reaching into bed F11, she scooped the sickly infant up and switched it with the neighboring child. She disposed of the bloodied sheets, then wrapped the healthy child in a blanket and carried her out.
She's all yours, said Kelsey.
Michael stared at the tiny infant before him, sleeping so delicately. His heart melted as he cradled her, marveling at her warmth, the sweetness of her scent, the fragility of her body.
Hush now, I've got you, he whispered.
A lump formed in Kelsey's throat, and her eyes glistened as guilt rose within.
Good luck, Michael, she uttered, disappearing into the ward.
Kelsey lingered by the doorway to the factory floor. As an automaton glided through, she took her chance and slipped into the restricted area. It was an hour past closing time, and the human floor staff were gone. Automatons operated the equipment by night, and Kelsey was determined to find out where things were going wrong. She ducked behind a cooling tank as two machines drifted by. Undetected, she crept after them, staying hidden behind tanks and piping. The automaton stopped before an aged wooden sculpture. It was 4 feet high and shaped like a human, with androgynous anatomy. The figure's head was bowed, and its arms hung by its side. It stood on a circular platform carpeted by greenery. The wet moss covered much of the figure's lower half and was growing upwards across the cracked torso and arms. A narrow moat of water and lush flora surrounded the sculpture's feet. Standing either side of the figure, the machines waited. Ripples radiated outward from the base of the statue. Kelsey gasped as the sculpture's head twisted round to meet the gaze of the nearest automaton. Its arms creaked as it raised its left palm out flat, facing up. The automaton extended a metallic arm and made contact. Opening a hatch in the sculpture's hand, the machine turned to its partner. The second automaton passed a die-sized cube to the first. It bore a complex surface of grooves, which the lead automaton slotted into the wooden palm. The sculpture recentered on its head. Creaking, its ribcage opened up and outwards like wings unfolding. Water gushed from its body until all that remained in the dripping damp cavity was enamel piping. Two thick pipes rose from the sculpture's legs, converging in the torso like an upturned tuning fork. A shadow passed up from the left leg pipe into the central block. As the top segment swung open like a doorway, the automaton reached into the dripping cavern and pulled out a dark capsule. Twisting the top off, it removed a thin slab of glass from the middle, which it passed to its colleague. With the empty capsule replaced and the pipe sealed, the wooden ribcage creaked shut. The automaton retrieved the cubic key, and the sculpture lowered its arm, dipping its head. The machines left the mossy pool and glided to a large metal cage. Using its fingers, the lead automaton split the glass slab like a pistachio shell. It teased out a shimmering strip covered in symbols. Kelsey recognized the strip's colors from the cerebrium she'd excavated in the mine. The lead automaton placed the strip onto a golden grill hanging from a chain. Its colleague added drops of serum, causing the hues of amber and gold to drain from the mineral strip into a collection pot below. With the gelatinous strip rendered translucent, the assistant disposed of it, along with the cracked slab, while the lead automaton attended to the filtrate. Carrying the pot, it glided over to a vat too tall for Kelsey to observe. She hastily scaled the maintenance ladder, relying on the factory's extraction fans to mask the noise of her steps. The vat was full of yellow, milky water. In the center was an island of wet, gray sand, onto which the automaton poured the golden solution. As its colleague returned, the pair lifted paddles from the rack and took up positions on opposite sides of the vat. Gliding in sync, they stirred half a rotation in one direction, then three quarters the opposite way. Kelsey had never seen automatons move like this. Their bodies loosened, swaying, as they augmented each paddle stroke with full-body convulsions. The effect was a mesmerizing fusion of martial art, ritual, and dance. As their movements became more complex, the mixture thickened into a paste. The stirring turned to a folding, then kneading and sculpting. Repeatedly, they molded the paste into symbol-like shapes, then back into nothing. Kelsey realized they were making the same 9 symbols in succession, creating and destroying them in ever quicker cycles until the clay was rising and falling like a virtuoso ballerina. Their movements halted. The machines bowed to each other, then glided around the vault. They caressed the clay with their paddles, smoothing it into a perfect pebble. Something clattered from the neighboring dock. Kelsey crept along the walkway to investigate. Below her, 2 automatons were tending to a broad, shallow clay pot, like the one she'd seen in her interview weeks before, only this one had a lid. The clay dish was suspended above a roaring flame. Boiling brown liquid oozed down on one side of the pot, escaping the trembling lid. Using a chain pulley, the automatons raised the pot off the flame, shunted it along a rail, and lowered it onto the mesh floor. They prized the lid off with a lever and stood back as steam billowed up, forcing Kelsey to recoil. Broiling fluid spilled over the pot's sides and into the underfloor gullies. As the steam cleared, Kelsey's eyes focused on the inside of the pot. Her jaw dropped. Inside was a half-formed infant, curled in a ball, forged from blistering gray clay. Only the legs and lower arms were intact. The clay child's upper half had ruptured and was dissolving in the brown, amniotic solution. Lowering an overhead pipe, the automatons released a torrent of cold water onto the sizzling clay. As the billowing steam cleared, Kelsey watched in horror as the automaton scraped out the remains of the half-formed child. One flooded the clay dish with cleansing agents while the other dumped the clay corpse in a refuse cart. It wheeled the remains to a pit, locked the carts into position, and punched a control button. With flashing orange bulbs and a ringing bell, 2 trap doors opened. Smoke belched from the smoldering pit, clearing to reveal a churning inferno. Below, a mechanical grinder tore through blistered clay and boiling paste. With the crank of a lever, the cart tipped up, flinging the child's remains into the hellhole. A metal hand seized Kelsey's shoulder. She yelped in fright as an automaton snatched her from the ground and glided along the platform at speed. "I won't run, just put me down," implored Kelsey as they descended the elevator. The machine obliged, but kept a firm hand on her shoulder as they stepped onto the factory floor. Kelsey gulped as it marched her to her boss's office, rapping its metal knuckles against the door. "Enter," came Hesley's clipped reply. Her face soured as the machine thrust Kelsey in.
"Infiltrating a restricted area? Did you learn nothing from your interview? You'd better have an excellent explanation, or I'm calling the police."
"I'm sorry, boss. I was only trying to understand."
"Understand what?"
"Why birth abnormalities are increasing. It's devastating so many families, and you're expecting me to deliver these kits to them with no way of explaining what went wrong, or preventing it again."
"What if nothing went wrong?"
"What do you mean? I just saw..." "What do you think our purpose is here, Kelsey?"
"Making life."
Hesley shook her head.
"We neither create lives nor take them away. Such responsibilities lie with the ministry alone. We fulfill orders. Every commission is unique, bringing with it infinite possibilities."
possibilities like defects? There are no defects. The Ministry encodes every child most deliberately.
Then explain that hellish fire pit, fumed Kelsey.
Occasionally, errors arise during the bake, which result in termination. These are deeply regrettable, and an inherent risk of what we do. None that leave these doors. If human error causes irreparable damage during a bake, the infant is terminated, and the guilt is ours to bear.
I don't understand. How can you say we only release successful bakes when we have patently unhealthy children awaiting collection?
Every child on the neonatal ward is exactly as the Ministry intended them.
But intentional defects bring untold suffering to both family and child. Why would they?
It is not our place to challenge the Ministry's wisdom or the principles of our covenant, Kelsey. There is a reason that area is restricted. We only allow access once workers are qualified and emotionally equipped to understand what they're seeing. However, you've circumvented the protocol designed to protect you, and in doing so, have created a fork in the road. What you witnessed cannot be unseen. Where once you may have left this place, your freedom is now forever bound to it. The Ministry cannot allow this knowledge to corrupt the masses. If you leave, knowing what you know, they will ruin you.
Stay,
and you can achieve the transcendental. Are you a slave to your misguided principles? Or are you ready to uphold the sacred?